The gig economy. On paper, it's a project-based organization's dream. Just pull in remote contractors whenever you need them and carry on your merry way. But for a lot of project managers, a revolving door of remote contractors can look like more of a headache than a benefit. First, there's the issue of commitment. How can I be sure that this person won't disappear halfway through the project? Then there's the issue of skill. How will I evaluate whether the quality of their work is up to scratch before it impacts the project? And more than anything else, there's a question of consistency. What happens when we start the next phase of the project and the same contractor isn't available anymore? But what if it wasn't a revolving door at all? What if you could use today's gig economy to build a stable team of remote contractors that sticks around for years? If you've been struggling to find the balance between the convenience of remote contractors and the commitment of full-time employees, keep listening. We're going to be exploring how you can build a loyal, high-performing team from an otherwise disparate, ragtag group of remote contractors. Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. My name is Galen Lowe with the Digital Project Manager. We are a community of digital professionals on a mission to help each other get skilled, get confident, and get connected so that we can amplify the value of project management in a digital world. If you want to hear more about that, head over to thedigitalprojectmanager.com. Okay, today we're talking about how you can build long-term loyalty with a team of remote contractors to create consistency across your projects and maybe even build a business around it. With me today is Natasha Galinsky, someone who's done exactly that as the founder and lead technical project manager of On Purpose Projects. Natasha, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for letting me on the call.
I'm so fascinated to get some of your stories out because you and I, we've been jamming, we've been talking. Your story is amazing. There's at least four episodes there that I wanted to talk through. But the one thing that really baffled me, and not to give away the punchline, but the thing that baffled me was that you were able to build essentially a small digital agency around a team of loyal and consistent remote contractors. So that's what I wanted to dig into today. But I wonder, could you just share a bit of like the backstory that you told me? As I understand it, you're a bit of an accidental entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And you're not someone who necessarily considers themselves like a digital expert. So I wondered, could you tell our listeners just a bit about how you started On Purpose Projects, the kinds of people that you help, the kinds of projects you take on?
For sure. I run a web development agency. I'm in Vancouver, Canada, and I've run the agency for about 8 years. And I have never built a website in my life, like never once. And I don't even know how anyone on my team actually does what they do. And I was a management consultant. Like my background is all in management consulting, project management. And I remember I had a client and I was working in the nonprofit sector and I had a client and he said to me, he's like, hey, you know, we need to update our website. Can you find someone to help me do the website? And I was like, yeah, sure. So went to Upwork, didn't really think much of it. Hired a guy from Bangladesh, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, right? Like I was just like cheapest guy. I don't know. I think that's what everybody does, right? And luckily it worked out and we ended up doing the site. And then the guy was like, well, I have a partner and he's looking to just make some changes. Could your guy, you know, help with this one? I'm like, sure. And then literally within 6 months, I was like out of the management game and into the website world. And like, so I've had a team like since day one, like literally have never, like if I was on Survivor for websites, I'd be like the first one off the island. Like maybe like, I wouldn't even know where to start, honestly. I'm just so blessed. Like I've had a great team and yeah, they are the ones that make it happen for sure. So
I love that. And you know what? What I appreciate about the story is this sort of boldness, but this kind of like accidental boldness, you know, kind of the shrug of like, oh, whatever, let's give it a go. But I, you know, there's so many people in our community who are project managers who feel so self-conscious about the fact that, you know, they may have a great grasp of how the sausage is made in terms of building a website or an app or a digital marketing campaign, but they're hitting this barrier of like, I don't know exactly what's involved in this person's job. And therefore I feel like I'm at a disadvantage. Whereas, you know, the way the story goes for you is almost like the opposite. It's like, actually, you know what? I need to build a team because I don't know how to make the sausage. Right. And it's like, I rely on them. Right.
And the irony is my team, we're not like a template website team. We are like custom dev. Like if you have a website and you need to integrate with some sort of artificial intelligence or make your thing do this thing, like we're not basic drag and drop Elementor website. We are like dream it, build it, do it team. So incredibly technical. My entire team is like full stack developers. Everything we do is custom. We like specialize in custom complex tech fixes, work with stuff all the time that I literally do sales calls and I'm like, they'll ask me like, so how? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I got a team. There's, you know, they're the brains of the operation. And yeah, so it's even to this day, like, and as tech changes, our deliverables become more and more and more and more technical. So I just gave up trying to figure it out like years ago, because I'm like, I'm never going to, you know, my job is I have a lane. I know what my lane is and I let them stay in their lane and it works. It creates a really good team dynamic, right?
I wanted to swing back on the two things you said. One, you said tech fixes, and actually your origin story started with, hey, I need someone to just fix this thing, fix this website. That might not strike a lot of people as being the difficult part, but in my background, that is a difficult part because you're going into something, you know, we're in our lane as project managers, as business owners. We're trusting our team to do a thing that involves looking at other developers' code, other technical architecture that they're not familiar with, you know, getting familiar with it and then making changes that are stable actually is a very difficult thing. Do you do a lot of project fixes?
I would say 90% of the stuff we do is working on someone else's stuff. Because the nature of the agency world, it's there's a lot of competition in that page builder, visual editor. Again, I know the jargon, but I don't know how it works. I can talk the talk, right? But it's like there's a lot of competition in that like $40 to $50 an hour range. You know, there's a lot of people who say they're a web developer, but they just know how to make a Divi site or an Elementor site. Or, you know, like they don't code. So for example, like everyone on my team can code. We can work with anything from Shopify to React to Laravel to custom CMS to like they do it all. Like we have software people, we have everything. So we have a little bit of everything on the team. And so my team really loves tricky, challenging work. So we've just sort of created this niche for ourselves where we are like the fix it, finish it specialists, where we pick up websites all the time that are like at 90%, something's wrong, someone got fired, the technical skill level required is like now out of range for their in-house team or whatever, and we get brought in. And it's so risky and so dangerous and so problematic. And I'm like, how did I get here? Like, how did this happen exactly? Like, we're working in like the trickiest dev, in the trickiest circumstances, with like, you have to require so much emotional intelligence as well, because your client at that point is like skeptical and terrified, right? So you're coming in after the breakup and you're the next person and it's incredibly difficult. And people, I was on a call actually a couple of months ago and they're like, you know, like you're kind of painted yourself into like probably the most challenging corner of web development. And I'm like, never thought about it. I just would like close work that my team likes to do. And I was like, okay, guys, here we go. Like, you want to do this today? Okay, let me find something. I'll go hunt it out. I'll close it for them and sell it. And they do it and just try to keep my team happy, really.
So. One of those shows where like they're like either dirty jobs or like whatever, lobster fishermen that have very, very dangerous jobs. They're jobs that nobody else wants to do.
Exactly. Totally.
It makes the market a little less competitive, but it is very high octane, very intense stuff. That sounds like the business you've built, but in websites.
I know. I had a call the other day with this guy and he called me and he's like, and he had had two different websites built by two different teams, and they were these Laravel sites or whatever, and they were like really tricky. Laravel's like, you got to know what you're doing to work with a Laravel site. It's not just like WordPress where you can kind of figure it out as you go, right? Anyway, and so he's like, so what do you do? And I'm like, we're kind of like disaster response. Like, kind of like, yeah. But no, it's just ironic because it's like the sales process will be like, let's imagine, you know, you and I are talking, you're telling me about your website issue, and you're like, so how do you do that? And I'm like, you know what? That's a great question. I'm not a developer myself, but I run a full stack team. What I'm going to do is take all your questions back to my crew. We're going to figure it out for you and I'm going to get back to you. And they're like, okay. Like, I am like totally upfront. Like, no, like I am not the brains. I am the project manager. I'm the team leader. I am the support. I'm the scrum master. I'm the facilitator, but I am not the talent here. I've never pretended to actually know what anybody does.
Honestly, so. That is part of it. I feel like so many project managers or anyone who's sort of client facing, especially accounts teams, I've been in sales and business development. So you feel this pressure to have the answer. And yet the worst thing you can do is make something up.
Oh, I think I stopped doing that because I tried and I ended up like just foot in mouth all the time. They're like, oh yeah, we can do that. No problem. And now I'm like, I don't see that anymore. I'm like, no, I'm like, tell you what, this is a great question. Let me take it to my crew and I'll get back to you in a couple hours. And then they're like, yeah, great. Because what I found as well is like the client just wants the job done. They don't care who's doing it. And it's kind of like I've been doing this for 8 years. I mean, I'm a ACP, PMP, Scrum Master. Like I know how to project manage. Like I know how to lead a team. I know how to organize. I know how to facilitate. I know how to get stuff done. Like I know how to keep the plate spinning and everybody happy. Like, that's my lane, right? But it's just like, in terms of, and sometimes clients are honestly relieved. They're like, I'm not pretending that, you know, because I think especially in tech, I don't know how it is with other agencies, but especially in web development, like so many people blow smoke, right? Like, yeah, we can fix it. And then next thing you know, my team is in trying to unfix it, you know? And it's like, it's so common. They'll try to like blow smoke. They know what they're doing. And I just don't. I'm like, look, like that's not my job on this team, right? And they're like, great. So, and we're high ticket too. We're not like low level. Like we're, and people get it. They appreciate the honesty, honestly, right? So.
You know what I really like about that is that you didn't say my job is to whatever, lead the business vision, like manage the accounts or anything like that. You said my job is to keep people happy. And I know that from a certain extent, yes, the client, but also I'm gathering that that also means keeping your team happy.
My team is first. Yeah. Team before client every time.
There you go. Which I think actually takes us right into our punchline, which is that, I mean, as I understand it, you've now had the same team of remote contractors for about 8 years. And that is just not common where I come from. Like in the world that I, like the circles that I travel in, usually it's like this revolving door. Even agencies that are trying to retain full-time staff can't keep that door from revolving. And yet you're doing the thing that most people, right, in a gig economy would be built around a revolving door of like, okay, yeah, just go on to Upwork, just, you know, try and find, you know, a person to do a thing for like a few days and then off they go. And just having this like revolving door of gig workers, whereas you actually kind of did the opposite. I'm just wondering, when you think back on it, how did you build that kind of loyalty with that kind of team configuration?
No, that's a great question. Like the guy who designed my logo on day one still is my lead web designer. So it's amazing, you know, and I've never had anybody quit. I fired people, but I've never had anybody quit. I've had the same crew. I've had the same assistant VA for 5 years. Like, yeah, I'm so, so, so blessed. Like so grateful. Like that first guy that I was talking about that I hired, he still works with us. And it's like my core team of five people who only work for me. I have some people I bring in for certain things. Like I don't keep a full-time graphic designer. I don't keep a full-time JavaScript guy. Like I have my procurement people that I don't need every day. And so my job is to make sure they have a job, they like their job, they're happy. And I think the main thing, honestly, because I think about this a lot, I do, I'm like, how have I earned that kind of loyalty, right? Where we've been through crazy economies together. If you have a bad client, I mean, that can destroy a team morale. You know, like we have been through it in 5 years, right? Like together. And the one thing I think I'm always very conscious of is they're not my employees, right? Like I don't have a co-located team. We're all remote. Like I have to earn that loyalty. Like I do not expect it. Like every day they could go work somewhere else. And I'm very aware. Like they're not under contract. They're freelancers. They're not Canadian, so I can't give them a job. Like none of them are Canadian. So I'm just very conscious of making sure that I know what their goals are and that through working with me, they are achieving their own goals. So it's like, I want them working with me to be the best part of their day. I mean, let's say barring their partners, but like they're professional, let's say they're professional. Like I want them to want to work here, to be happy to work here, to be empowered working with me, to be getting theirs, to be like, I have this one guy on my team right now and he really wants to learn about how AI integrates with website stuff. Like that's really hot right now, right? Like AI. And we had a little bit of a slow week last week and I was like, hey, do you want to find a class and I'll pay half? And he's like, yeah, sure. So, you know, and it's me working with them is like the joy of my life too. Like I love them. Like I'm so grateful that I get to be their leader, you know, and I do not take it lightly. Like I do not take it for granted that they could walk like any day. And I just, so I don't know, every day to me, I'm very conscious of that, of coming to them with love and respect and professionalism and gratitude and kindness and emotional intelligence. Like when something does go wrong, like making sure that I'm on their side and, you know, like, so I don't know, like there's, I guess the answer is I'm just moment to moment conscious of every interaction with them to make them want to be there, you know, knowing each person, like knowing which drives each person. Like some people are very driven by whatever, like knowing what their motivators are. And then, so some people I have who they like lots of communication and they like check-ins and daily scrum and they want to talk. And then some guys are like, I don't want to talk to you. Just leave me alone. Like, let me just do my thing. Slack check-in once a day. It's good. Cool. I'm like, cool. Like, all right. You're happy. I'm happy. Everybody's happy. Okay, good. Like, and then when you have a team that is happy, like, cause we work very scrum style where we all talk to the client. Like where it's not just me. Like, we're all talking to the client. So not only does my tech team need to have incredible tech skills, they also need to have really good people skills, which is rare, right? If you've worked for tech people, like, that's not always a big strength, right? But I watch how they interact with the client, and they're like, kindness and patience and compassion. And I just look at how they talk to our clients too. And it's like, I understand where that comes from, right? Like, I treat them with patience and graciousness and love, then that's going to spill out, right? So I just sort of have to know, like, what you're going to put in, what you're going to get out, right? And so I'm just so grateful, like, honestly, so grateful to work with them as well. So
I love that. And there's so much I want to unpack there, because, you know, I think one of the big things that you said earlier on was, you know, you're earning their loyalty, you're not taking it for granted. And actually, I would think that a lot of people, myself maybe included, right, would come at it the other way. I'd be like, okay, here I am on Upwork. You know, listen, like, this could be almost like a full-time gig for you. You're going to be, I'm going to treat you like a staffer. You're going to be like part of the family, and like try and incent that way. But actually, you've done the opposite, where you've said, listen, I know that you could leave any day. That's part of the freedom of what you're doing. So every day I'm going to earn your loyalty by being respectful of the goals that you're trying to achieve and helping you achieve them, versus you helping me achieve my goals, which is kind of like the more sort of, you know, anyone who's looking for, I find this a lot in sort of part-time remote work in a gig or contractor situation, where it's like, okay, yeah, come in and do the thing and you're helping me, and then go away. Whereas actually you've kind of created this loyalty. So in other words, there isn't a pretense when you're seeking these people out. There's no pretense of, oh, you know, like, I'd like you to stay and be my person for this thing for like a decade.
No, I just, like, I look at it like literally it's a moment to moment thing. Like, it's like we talk on Slack all day. Like, we're very, yeah, we're not like a meetings team. Like, we're very Slack driven. I've never met any of them in person. Well, one of them I have, one time. He's worked for me 5 years and he was in Vancouver and we met up for coffee, but literally he's in Brazil. And we've never met in person. But it's like, for example, like, my assistant, she sometimes gets migraines. And so she'll text me. She's like, I'm really sorry, my head hurts. And I'm like, go. Like, I'll talk to you on Wednesday. Nothing urgent. Go. Like, take your day, right? And like, I don't know, I think it's just kind of speaking to that personal side, right? Or it's like, one of my tech lead, he and I have worked together all day, every day for like 5 years, right? And he's incredible. Like, he, like, I feel like just honored to even know this guy, right? And the fact that, but when I met him, he was a back-end developer. Like, he was, but now he's like full stack. But like, when I met him, he was just, he'd never really built a website before. He'd never built the front end of a website. And I remember I closed this really big project, this big, like, I don't know, like $60,000 e-commerce redesign project. And he'd never really done it. But I was like, what do you think? And he's like, I think I could do it. I'm like, all right, let's go, man. Like, okay. And he killed it, you know? But it was like, I think it's like really like everyone who works for me didn't do what they do. Like, my web designer, he's an engineer and he just had a gig, you know? And then now he's a full-time UI UX guy. But 8 years ago, he was a mechanical engineer, you know, and I liked him. I thought his work was good. And so he, with me, has like developed his skills. And then same thing, like, no one really did what they do. But I think the thing when you're team building, it's like, skills are a part of it, but it's like, you're hiring for character and attitude training, and you can develop a skill set. Like, you can't make a non-tech person a tech person. Like, you can't, that's too much. But if you meet someone and they're kind and they're smart and they're hardworking and attention to detail and excellence and good communication, and you can, and they're a back-end developer, okay, you can make that person, you could make that person a full stack developer. But I needed a full stack guy and he was back end. I'm like, close enough. All right, let's do this, you know, together, right? If you can build the back end, you can build the front end. Come on, like, that's the easy part. But anyway, so I just think it's like, I've always looked at my team as like, how can I help them grow in their careers? Like, again, I have no guarantee they're going to stay. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It's like, I figure if I give them so much value of being on this team, they're not going to want to leave, right? Like, and I pay them all like more than most developers make where they live. Like, I pay North American wages to Brazilian developers, and they're all probably, I don't know, like, I don't know what that equivalent is. I have a friend in Brazil. He's like, oh my God. He's like, you pay what? And I was like, it's market rate for a full stack developer. He's like, yeah, not in Brazil. And I'm like, doesn't matter. Like, I'm paying for, like, just because they're in Brazil doesn't mean I'm going to pay them 25% like of what I'm paying them. Like, that's not fair. So I don't know. So that might not be the best business model possibly, but it's part of the loyalty, right? Like, I pay what the job would pay.
I mean, it says a lot, right? You know, when I look at, you know, I've worked in a lot of organizations where offshoring and nearshoring, it's a complicated balance where it sort of seems like the strategy is more exploitative than it is about a partnership. It's just like, oh, lower cost resources, you know, who knows what the quality is going to be. We'll need to like put some, you know, guardrails around it versus I think you're coming at it from a much different place, which is like, well, this is the value that they're delivering to me. Like margins aside, you know, it's less about getting cheap labor and more about finding good people wherever they are in the world, people that you can grow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then growing that talent. And, you know, everything I've read about sort of building high performance teams is about the sort of aligning to their motivations, their goals, their mastery of their craft, where they want to be able to take their skill set and maybe not do the same thing that they are hired to do, and just aligning those. And I think that's really cool. I want to ask a little bit about your vetting process. You know, you're looking for new people. And to your point, you're like, I'm looking for friendly, kind people who are smart. And yes, I can't, you know, turn somebody who is not technical into a technical person. But what are your fence posts when you're looking for people? And like, what jumps out at you?
For sure. So the first thing I look for is communication. Because for me, I've been self-employed for 20 years. So I've always had never a team like now, but I've always had an assistant or something. And like, and I know for me, I know me as me, I need a lot of communication. Like I cannot work blind. Like I will not work blind. And I know working in the web development world, like when I get on a new client, I'm like, the number one complaint is bad communication. And I get it. I get it because but in fairness to the team, when you're coding, I'm speaking just from a web developer world, but I'm assuming it's like anything. When you're designing, when you're developing, you don't want to check Slack every hour. You just want to do your job. You're just like, leave me alone. Oh my God, let me finish this. Stop pinging me on Slack. Like, oh my God, right? But I get it. I totally, totally get it. But at the same time, I know for me, my number one factor when I'm hiring is I need to know what is going on. And I don't need, like, if I have a client who's emailing me for an update, I need you to like set a notification on your phone that every 90 minutes you're going to head up, check Slack, get back to me. Like, I need communication. Like, I will not work dark for 2 days. Like, I will not. And so things like that. So like I had a guy, you know, on my team, and he's worked with me for a long time, probably 5 years as well. And he wanted a raise. And I'm like, hey, I'm happy to give you a raise. But I'm like, this communication, the way he was just getting lazy, like sloppy with like his response times to me. And again, he's a very introverted guy. He doesn't like the chit chat. Like, I get it. I respect that. That's fine. But I'm like, it was really throwing off my rhythm as the project manager. Like, cause I couldn't spin the plates if I didn't know where we were. Right. So I was like, look, I'm like, if you change the communication, I will give you the raise. Like, let's do it for like, let's give it 90 days or not. What did I say? It was like 60 days, 90 days or something. And I'm like, if you can fix it, I will give you the raise. And he's like, done. And he fixed it, you know, but it's like, for me, my number one criteria is like, you have to be a responsive, on point, patient communicator. Like I had one guy who was working with me one time, such a great guy, smart guy. But he was like, he had a lot of ego. So if I asked for edits, he'd get really upset. And I was just like, I think you're fantastic. Like your code is beautiful, but I'm like, this communication is not working. So I fired him. And a year later he came back and then I worked with him again because I really liked him. And I fired him again as I fired him twice. But it's like, I would rather have an excellent communicator, weaker coding, because you can fix the coding, right? So, but to me as a project manager, like it's really important to me that they respect and understand my role on this team, right? Like for example, on Upwork, we have a 100% success score. I have like 100 five-star reviews. Like we are killer at what we do, but I am the face of this. And so my team knows like I take the fall if this goes sideways, not them. They're invisible, right? Like in some most cases. So it's like, they're very like, they've got my back. You know what I mean? Which I really appreciate. And it's like, they QA all their own work. If they're not sure, they have someone who can do design review. If they have questions, they talk to each other. They do their best to deliver as good quality as possible so that I don't get egg on my face, right? But in return, I back them, right? Because if I have a client who's mad, I will lose the client and stand by my man, right? Like, you know, the expression. Like, I will never throw my team under the bus. Like, under zero circumstances, like, we could lose a huge project. doesn't matter. Like, I'm going to stand by my team. Like, I don't know. So I think they know that I would do that, right? So that they reciprocate by bringing their best work to the table. So to answer your question, that was kind of a long drawn out way, but communication, number one. Communication, number one, I vet by, I give everybody a trial job. They come in and I see how they talk to me, right? And are they organized? Do they communicate well with me? If it's 9 hours and you have not sent me an update and I asked for an update like 8 hours ago, you're done. Like, there's no accident. We have 100% success rate. It's not an accident. I know what I'm doing. But for that to happen, my team has to meet me halfway. I really go by personality as well. Like, I have to really like them as a person because you're together a lot and you're talking a lot. And you're, if I don't like them as a person, skills aside, I'm not going to go for it. Honestly, code and skill is like kind of the bottom, honestly, because you can fix that. Like, you can fix that. I remember whenever I hire somebody new, now I've got a stronger team. Like, they can, so if I hire a new developer, the other developers will check their work, right? And like review their code. But in the beginning, I would hire QA people to check because I don't know how to check their code. I don't know. Like, I know nothing about code. So I would have people to kind of come in and check. And now we've got to do that more organically. But I assume if someone's been a web developer for 5 years, they know what they're doing. So I kind of don't worry about that part, you know, like I kind of more about, are they the right fit for this team and this dynamic with me and my crazy? And, you know, can they, it's like the Deadpool, right? It's like, you know, that I'm sure everybody knows that expression, right? It's like, why do we get along so well? It's like, well, your crazy matches my crazy. And it's like, okay. So it's like, someone's just got to work with my crazy and I got to work with their crazy. And if it works, work. Okay, we're good. Right.
I really like that. I really like the sort of trial, the sort of, it's a working trial because I know a lot of folks are like, oh, well, you have to assess communication skills in an interview. And I'm like, an interview is basically everyone's going to be the perfect version of themselves and try and play the interview game versus actually let's do a little trial project. And to your point, OK, red flag here, red flag there. They're not communicating the way that I asked them to or that I, you know, they're not jiving with me, you know, personality wise, that's going to create conflict down the road and then making a decision based on that. I really do like that. And the other thing, actually, the other thing I want to jump back to, because I know a lot of folks listening are probably like, OK, yeah, Natasha in the middle, contractors around her, but everyone's kind of communicating with her. But you said something, you said they'll ask one another questions. And I would just, I mean, you said, you know, they're all remote. You've met one of them in person. They are not full-time employees, but I get the sense that they very much feel like a team. Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've created that kind of by default because they know I don't know. So it's actually worked to my favor. Like, I remember the first 5 years of the agency, like I was always felt really shamed and like to go to like an agency meetup or like a mastermind. Cause I'm like, because most agency owners are like evolved to agency level designers or developers, right? I have never, I'm like sales and management. Like that's my background's all in sales and management. My team, literally, they know I do not know. So they do not bring me questions about tech or hosting or DNS configuration issues or cPanel login problems. And so on Slack, I see them talking to each other and they problem solve. And then if and when they need me to talk to the client about something like, okay, hey, like we've tried, it's not working, like whatever, or then they'll bring me in. Most of my team is actually Brazilian. I didn't plan it that way at all. I didn't, it just evolved like that. And so they speak Portuguese, right? So my bookkeeper lives in Venezuela and she doesn't speak English. And I speak Spanish, so I can work with her, no problem. And so she does all the books and she does all the payroll and she does all the everything. And they talk to each other using Google Translate. I don't know. It's beautiful. It's like a beautiful, beautiful thing. Like they've kind of created this culture among themselves. Like if someone's busy, like we're very much like the agile scrum Kanban where it's like kind of that like cross-functional team where if someone is busy, someone else can jump in. And so they all work on each other's stuff like very interchangeably. So like if you have someone who is sick, we can move someone in and there's no ego about like, that's my job. You know, it's like, no, because you know what? You were out last week and he did your thing. And so I've never had any ego, like any machismo, any kind of like drama, because they know that there's been a time when they were gone and someone covered them. And it just frees me up. I personally love Scrum philosophy of let the team do their thing. Let them self-organize. Let them handle it. And then if and when it hits a point, okay, then they can come to you. But it works really well in agency life. Like having a bottleneck doesn't help. And it doesn't like stresses me out. It creates like weakness and it's kind of like no adult wants to be treated like a 10-year-old, right? Like, we all want to make our own decisions and creatively come up with solutions. And I just give them the space. I hold that space for them to do that, right? And sometimes they make mistakes and they make a bad call. And that sometimes is like, ugh. But that's part of it, right? That's part of it. So
I love that trust. And I like the sort of psychological safety that it creates, knowing that, you know, you can raise your hand and say, yeah, I'm feeling sick. Or you can get supported by your teammates, and mistakes are going to happen and we'll work through it. And, you know, Natasha comes from a place of not knowing either. So it's just kind of like this, like, you know, more level playing field. I wonder, though, I mean, it sounds like it works really well, but I imagine that you've come into some challenges along the way. What are some of the big ones that you've faced just nurturing this remote team for all these years? And how do you address them? How do you overcome them?
Well, for whatever reason, during COVID, we had three really, I'm going to say, difficult clients back to back. Like, and we all know what that feels like when you have a client who is just, they will not let you quit. They will not let you close. Like, they just like, and we had this one client, he was really mean, like name calling and threatening to sue us and like, just crazy. Like, it was like over the top. It's never happened like that before, and it's never happened again. So I'm so grateful. But like, you know, I question whether there was some sort of other thing going on in his life. Who knows? But anyway, so my tech lead, the same guy who I was talking about, he was doing his best because he's a very calm guy. And he was doing his absolute best to like mediate the situation. He wasn't getting paid. The client had refused to pay us until we had fixed this thing. And he couldn't fix it. Like, it wasn't fixable based on how the site was set up and whatever. And so we made a recommendation, like, okay, no, we need to take this away. We need to do it like this. He wasn't willing to do that. So he was just not participating, right? But he was like holding the money until we had fixed it. And I said to my guy, I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, it can't be done the way he wants it done. Like, it has to be taken down. It's not working. It has to be rebuilt. And then the guy was like threatening to sue me, and I'm getting all these messages, and I was like, oh my God. Like, and it was awful, right? It was just this season of the developers freaking out. He thinks I'm going to get sued because he can't fix it, but the client, it's not fixable. It was just this trifecta of crazy. I think at the time, the client owed me like $5,000 or something. So I went to the client. I'm like, look, this is the situation. Keep your money. We can't fix this under the circumstances. Please let us know if you want to bring in a new team. We're happy to onboard the new team for you. Like, just trying to not get sued, right? Like, and we walked from the money, and I said to my guy, I'm like, you know, let me pay you for your time. Like, you worked your ass off. And he's like, no. He's like, you don't get paid. I don't get paid. Like, none of us are getting paid. I don't want to get paid. But we were like, the damage control on that job was like, we both went to therapy. We just had to rally like together. Because I could have been like mad at him. I'm getting these texts on a Sunday night. I'm going to sue you, see you in court, blah, blah, blah. And I knew he had no grounds. Like, there was no contract. Like, there was nothing he could have done to actually sue me. So I knew it wasn't true. But it was like, no, protecting him is my priority here. That connection, his emotional health, like, this is what's important. And it took the fall with the client. And that's happened before where like I have a guy, they'll make a mistake. Like, sometimes they're not perfect. They'll make a mistake. And or we miss a deadline or whatever, and the client's upset, right? And it's like that emotional intelligence for me to like not take that anger from the client to my team. And maybe it's just that mom in me. I mean, I have three kids, but it's like I need to protect them and their health and their sanity. Like, we have a rule on the team. No one works for free. I'm obsessed about scope creep management. Like, no one works for free. And like, even yesterday, like I had one of my guys quoting a project and he's like, I got a bad feeling. He's like, the client's scoping document, because a lot of times I don't even read the scoping documents because I don't even know what it's going to say. So they'll review and they estimate all their own work and stuff. I don't write the estimate, they do. And he's like, I got a bad vibe. Like, I don't think this client is what he's looking for is realistic. He's like, I got a really bad vibe. And I replied to the client. And I'm like, I really appreciate the invitation to the project, but we're going to pass. Because I'm like, I said to my, I'm like, I trust you. Like, I trust your instincts on this. You do this way more often than I do. And I'm going to, you say no, like, done. Like, and again, I wouldn't do that unless I had the grounds because I knew him and I trust his judgment and I know he's looking out for us. But yeah, no, sometimes it feels like you're in hell. It's like, you know, they say in relationship books, it's right. It's like, it's you and him against the problem, right? That's really what it's like. It's like, so not me against you. It's you and me as a team against the issue of crazy, insane client, right? Like, so I think it's just being very clear that my loyalty is to my people, but they've also earned it. It's not like I'm blindly like, I hired another guy last year, like 2 years ago, because during COVID we were busy and we were like, I had to hire a lot of people very quickly. And it was a mistake. I hired way too fast. But I had one guy who just kept dropping the ball. And I had three clients fire me because of this guy's bad work quality. And again, I was trying to, my loyalty was to this guy. And then after three times of like three clients being like, you know what? No, I had to tell him, I'm like, I can't, you're not fixing it. Like I would, after the first time I was like, we need to fix this. The next time it didn't, you know, and we have like a three strike policy on the team. If you don't do your job, like this is a work relationship. You are not my buddy, right? I will give you three chances. If you don't listen to me and you don't fix it, you're done. Right. So sometimes that happens. I mean, firing people to me is not difficult because I do have sort of a three strike system and I tell them when I hire them how it's going to go. It's not like a surprise. So I think that's part of the reason we've been able to keep really high work quality, because I will fire people who do a bad job. I'm just like, you're out. Like, no, that's not on brand for us. Like what we do requires incredible attention to detail. You can't do it. Too bad. Like, sorry. So it's like you said, it's that culture of safety, right? I will not throw them under the bus under any circumstances.
You know what I find interesting is actually there's two things there. One on either side of the coin. And yes, absolutely, the psychological safety and the trust that you've built. But one mechanical thing being that they are contractors that expect to be paid. It's not like payroll. It's not that you've budgeted for, you know, like, you know, and they're just going to get their paycheck whenever. Job has to be done. Therefore, you know, they have to have a say in it. You can't say, oh, well, that's okay. Well, you know, I can still recoup or I'll still pay you or whatever. Like, the client's not going to pay us, but let's still, you know, address this scope creep and entertain their unreasonableness. You don't really have that choice. The other side of the coin is that the mistakes that slip through the QA process hit you directly because it goes to client and client comes back to you. All of these things make them more immediate decisions, right? It's an immediate decision to be like, we can't fix this problem. We have to walk away. Let's walk away. And we make that decision together. And the other side of it being, you know, like work keeps coming back with, you know, the client's complaining, there's mistakes in this. We need to make a rapid decision. And that might be firing somebody. Because you can't really afford to be carrying any dead weight or to perpetuate something that really isn't working the way that you need it to. So it's almost like an immediacy that happens that creates a bit of, I think it creates trust and loyalty too, because you're making game time decisions with your team instead of abstracting that away from them because you know that they do have a say in it. It's not like they're just, you make the decision, but to, you know, have them work late and fix something and they'll get their paycheck anyways. There's all these mechanical bits where you actually need to have accounted for it and you need to involve them in the process.
Well, one thing that I do that I think makes it really fair is I don't, like, they do all the estimation. So it's like my job on the team is money management and marketing. So my job is to make sure they have a job. So that is very clear to everyone on the team. So my background is I've worked in direct sales for 20 years. So it's like, I love that front end, like the discovery and like the helping. I love that. But when I actually get a scope, I don't even look at it. Like, I'm embarrassed to say, but like I've closed, started and finished projects I've never even seen. Like, and so I get the scope doc. Like, I make sure that I check it to make sure they have what they need. I know what they need to price something, right? So I know they're going to need the hosting login. They're going to need the WordPress website login. Like, I know what they need, like, but I don't estimate it. I send it to them. Hey, do you guys have any questions? Before you can estimate. And then they get back to me with any questions. I send the questions to the client, like, hey, okay, my team is asking about this and this and this, you know, whatever it is, right? And then, okay, guys, any other questions? No. Okay, then they estimate. And then I tell them, okay, mark it up. So I give them a chance to mark it up 10% for margin, right? Because there's always me client stuff that's kind of like protecting against scope creep, right? So they mark it up. And I'm like, this is what I'm running with. So are you sure? Because if I close this, this is what you're sticking with. Like, and then they write the timeline. They write the price, or not the price, but like the hours. They send me all their price. I then like do all my admin stuff on it, send it. If it closes, they are now on the hook for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I did not set the time. So if you estimated 8 hours and you told me you could do this fixed price and it took 15, too bad, dude. Like, you told me 8, right? So if there was anything, but again, I make it too clear to the client, like if anything, unforeseen tech problems, and we have margins for like change of scope and stuff like that. But if the person estimated wrong, that's not on me. That's on you because you wrote the estimate. Like,
well, it's interesting. It creates, that's almost what creates the ownership and accountability to drive and motivate a self-managing team because they do own it. They didn't just inherit a thing and, you know, have to execute it as part of their 9-to-5. this is their thing. It is their, you know, their baby, so to speak.
Like, again, I think I did that only for the first year where I would guess and then I'd be wrong. And then I realized how wrong I was and I would then pay out of pocket for the extra time because I didn't know how to estimate work, right? So I would think, oh yeah, that would take 10 hours. I'd close it at 10 hours. The developer's like, no, that's like 22 hours of labor. And then I would feel like an idiot. And then I can't not pay them. So like, I honestly almost bankrupted myself like year one, two, three. And like, but now it's like, you know this better than me. And then I give them this window, right? Like, if there's anything else you need, it's like kind of like speak now, forever hold your peace. Like, I'm sending it. Done. And they all know that now, but it's like, and we know about fixed price versus hourly. You know, we have like a system to determine which one makes sense and risk versus reward, stuff like that. But no, I mean, if they tell me 8 and I close 8, they're going to stick to 8. And because they could have told me 15 and I could have tried to sell 15, you know what I mean? So they know that. They know they can't just come back to me like, oh, hey, sorry, it took longer. It's like, sorry, guys. Like, no, like barring something like really wrong that there was no way you could have foreseen that I can go back and say, hey, we had no way to know that this was going to da, da, da. Because I manage like sales, right? So I have to handle all those conversations around money and stuff. But unless there's a very valid reason for that price to change, they know how it affects me, right? Like, they know it makes me look bad. And the review, like, we're all aware of, like, I think I really appreciate the interdependencies of like, okay, their ability to do their job hugely affects my ability to close more work, to keep them working. So it's like this cycle, right? Where they all really appreciate and they respect like my role on the team, even though I don't, as it relates to deliverables, I do like almost like 10% maybe.
I love that ecosystem because it's symbiotic. Everyone's depending on one another to achieve a goal. And then that combined with, you know, great communication, you know, like a very deliberate approach to building loyalty both ways. It seems to work.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. I'm just honored. Like, honestly, I get to be their leader. I just feel very fortunate. So
let me close with one question. You started this 8 years ago. But if somebody today is like, I'd like to start, you know, a little digital agency, you know, maybe doing exactly what you do, right? Website builds, custom integrations, fixes. What advice would you have for them? Would you tell them to model what you have done?
I would say it's a very competitive field. It's very, very competitive. You have to love it. Like, you have to love what you do because it is complicated. The technology changes all the time. It's a moving target. You have to be the kind of person who's willing to like change literally like week to week to week to week, like what's happening. You have to be very nimble, very adaptable. It's very problematic. So you have to love what you're actually doing. You know, I've thought a million times about making career changes and stuff, but it's like, I fundamentally love helping people remove the burden of tech problems. Like, I love the relief that a client's like, oh my God, you're my fifth person who's tried to fix this and we fixed it in an hour when it took like 6 months. And, you know, like, I love that feeling of like, because I know how awful it feels to be like, tech stress is so annoying, right? And it's expensive and it's like so annoying to my clients. So I fundamentally love what we do. And then I fundamentally love working with who I work with. And so, but if you don't like it, it's too hard. Like, it's too hard. So it's got to be something that you want to do because you actually really love the work itself, not just because you think it's trendy or you think, hey, you know what? Yeah, I built a Facebook page. I could be a marketing agency. It's like, no, like everybody's good. Everybody's good at this, you know, like it's very rare. Like, you can figure out who the newbies are very quickly. But at a certain level, people are good. Like, and so you have to do it because you want to, if that makes sense. And so that's the advice I would give. It's like, don't do it because you think it's going to be a great business idea. Do it because it's what you really enjoy the work itself and building the teams, because you can't do it by yourself. You can't. Like, I'm like a part of a women in business, like agency mastermind team. And I'm the only one who doesn't do the thing. Right. And so I have a very different view, but all of them are social media marketers or content, whatever they do. Right. And they all do it. And I'm the only one who's like kind of standing outside the wall, like, hey guys, how's it going? Like, you know, and so I have a very, very different view, but it's, I don't know. It's just interesting. Like, you have to, yeah, you have to really enjoy the work that you're doing. Cause it's competitive as hell. Like, so I don't know if that gives you the answer, but that's the advice I would give after 8 years and multiple economies and multiple So
what about the remote configuration? Is someone starting out and they're like, no, I can't do this remote. I don't have enough visibility. I don't trust it enough. I'm going to hire local people. What advice would you give to that person?
Well, see, I don't know. I've always worked remote. Like I was working remote. Like when COVID hit, I was like, COVID what? Like I've lived in quarantine for 20 years. Like, what are you talking about? It's like, so to me, working remote, because again, I had three kids. To me, I was always like very conscious of only working when my kids were at school and like I didn't want to have to drive somewhere. So to me, I've always only worked, or not only, for the last 10 years, I've worked remotely. Personally, I can't imagine working with a co-located team. To me, that would be really annoying. Like having people around me, like I would never want to work with a co-located team. Like that is no interest to me. So I just feel in the world of technology with Slack and Zoom, like, I mean, I had one contractor who worked with me for a while and she had a baby, so she's not working with me anymore. But like, she lived like 20 minutes away. We worked together for 3 years and I never even met her. You know, like, I don't think it matters. I really think it makes no difference. It's just, you have to know as the leader, it forces you to be a better communicator, right? Because you're not, you don't have body language. You don't have like, there's no implied communication. You're typing on Slack, like, you know. So personally, I think a co-located team would waste a lot more time than a remote team because you got so much chit chat. But I don't know. I see no downside. You have zero overhead. Everyone's working from home. You know, it's people work in their own time zone, on their own schedule. As long as you're all on the same page of what those schedules are, doesn't matter, right? Like I have some people who start at like my 5 a.m. and I have some people who start at my 1 p.m. Like we're all in different seasons, in different time zones. And as long as we have enough time overlap, done. Doesn't matter.
I wonder if it actually comes back to what you said before, right? You have to love what you do in terms of delivering the work, but you also have to love what you do in terms of your work configuration and how you communicate with your team and what you're comfortable with. If you're somebody who works best and wants to lead a team that's all co-located in person, that's probably, then maybe don't go and try and build a remote team of contractors. But if it's your default gear to be remote, if it's your preference, then yeah, all bets are off and the economy is supporting it right now. It can be done. Why don't we leave it there? Natasha, thank you so much for your insights today. Thank you for sharing your stories. It was a great pleasure having you on the show. I hope our listeners have learned a lot. Would love to have you back as well.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, if there's anything I can do to help, anyone has any questions, just send them over. I'd be happy to answer. So
yeah, how can people get in touch with you?
Actually, today I set up, because I get asked this a lot. So I finally decided, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to set up a LinkedIn page about virtual teams because I'm speaking on another event next week about it. And so I realized, I'm like, you know, I think I need to talk about this a little more. So if you go to LinkedIn, you can find my name on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I would say, is the best bet. But yeah, like, and then definitely going to be, I think, creating some content about this because I do get asked about this a lot. And I can't code, but I can do this. So...
Well, I'll include your LinkedIn profile in the show notes below for anyone who is interested in reaching out to Natasha. And there you have it. As always, if you'd like to join a conversation with over 1,000 like-minded project management champions, come and join our collective. Head over to thedigitalprojectmanager.com/membership to learn a little bit more. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe and stay in touch on thedigitalprojectmanager.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.